The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Night Colors Bigfoot Radio. You are here with your hostess, Lauren Smith. And tonight, I have a special treat for you guys. I have the author of the Genesis 6 Project. This is a book about the Kandahar Giants. It is loosely based fiction. However, I really wanted to talk to the author about this because of his research into the topic, as well as his interest in other cryptids that spawned this book. So I really want to talk to him tonight, and I hope you guys bring a lot of questions. Before we get into it, please show some love for that Night Colors crew and give us a thumbs up, subscribe, hit that notification bell so that you don't miss any other shows that I have coming up. Next week, we'll have David Wilbanks that was rescheduled from last week. So thank you guys for your patience with that. My son is doing great. We handled the emergency. He's doing well now. So thank you all for your prayers and well wishes. And I'm not going to keep you any longer. I'm going to go ahead and bring Michael on. Like I said, please give us a thumbs up and bring your questions to the live chat. All right, here we go. All right. Hi, Michael. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks, Lauren. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. It is cold and rainy here, but we're making it. We're getting through it. Definitely not the weather to be out in the woods looking for Bigfoot right now. So here I am.
You can imagine.
Yeah. So you're from the Midwest, and you told me earlier, you know, it's just cold there and all that.
Cool. Do you? Snow. Yep.
Yeah, got the snow. So I'm just gonna go ahead and jump right in. You had mentioned in your bio that you have been into cryptids for quite a while. So what got you interested in cryptids and the weird and paranormal and all that?
Yeah. I mean, it for me, it's been kind of a lifelong study and or interest. You know, like everyone, when I was a little kid, saw the television shows and thought, you know, there's got to be something more out there than what we're seeing on television. And so, you know, probably for the last 30, 40 years, just trying to read everything that I could get my hands on and, right. You know, trying to creatively think about it. And was this true? Was this not true in a vantage point like that? So I don't know if there was one similar event, but it just kind of built, you know, for me over the years.
Okay. Was there one particular cryptid that you were more interested in than the others?
You know, I've been a big Bigfoot Sasquatch fan for a real long time. And, you know, dating back, and there's a lot of television shows, but this will date me as a child. I watched The $6 Million Man and that show that people probably say that's crazy what happened there. But then, you know, it was, you know, reading a lot of eyewitness accounts and seeing a lot of the evidence that, you know, people present, it made me think, you know, there's something out there that, you know, that's more than what people are telling us. And so that, you know, that intrigued me and made me want to learn more. Oh, I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
I muted myself. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. So I think that a lot of people, I think a lot of people get started that way. It's always, I either hear that they found a book in the library that, you know, intrigued them, or they watched a show on TV or the Patty film. A lot of people didn't know anything about Bigfoot until that Patty film came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, for me, I'm a very analytical person, and I've got, without going into great detail, I've got a science background as well. And so I wanted to apply some of that very analytic thinking to this area. And I just thought, well, there's so much to uncover here, because a lot of these things, particularly when you look at legends and things like that, there's a lot of times a kernel of truth buried within those those stories that maybe start out as stories and tells. And if we look at, for example, Native Americans, and we look at some of their legends and their stories, there are truths to those. And that kind of helped me think about, you know, in my own journey as I've gone through this area.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of people, you know, we have so many researchers out there. We have the more analytically minded ones, and then we have the storytellers such as yourself. So to have someone that can blend both of those things and then, you know, come out, put forth works about it, that's very important. I have another author that I brought on, and he does works of fiction regarding Bigfoot. However, all of his research is put into that book. And so it may be a work of fiction, but everything he puts in there is because he has researched it. He has gone out in the field. He has learned from other researchers. So, you know, everything that he puts, there's a grain of truth in every work of fiction, right? So that's kind of why I wanted to have you on tonight, because the Giants of Kandahar, that's a hot topic, as we discussed. That's a kind of a hot button for people, actually, too. I told you I made a post, and I post Bigfoot things all day long, and I made one post about the Giants of Kandahar, and to this day, it's one of my most popular posts. People still go back and comment on that post. So this is a hot topic. You know, that really gets people going, and it's amazing to me. We have, you know, 11 and 12 foot Bigfoot sightings and reports here, and it does not affect people as deeply as something living in the mountains that can rip your face off, you know?
Right.
So I don't know.
And there's a lot. I mean, when I look, there's been, as a novice in the Bigfoot space, there's a lot of very reputable source materials. At least to me, it looks like when I start reading material in books and stuff out there, at least compared to the Kandahar situation, there's a lot more, you know, material out there.
Yeah, no, there is. So I told you that, hold on a second. I'm having a scratchy throat right now. Mm-hmm. Huh. It's all the snacks that I was eating right before we went live, if I'm being honest. So I told you that I have a special interest in this topic. You know, anything with a mythical creature and government cover up, like, you know, that's bait to a Bigfoot researcher, you know, to someone like us that studies the weird. So I have a special interest in this because I was given an encounter by somebody who allegedly hadn't had the experience that we hear about in the 2000s, where the contingent of military personnel faced one of these things down. It attacked one of their, or attacked them. They fired back and eventually killed the thing. I had someone give that account to me from a personal standpoint. Now, this person, you know, it's hard because the skeptic in me wants to say that this person heard it secondhand or read about it and then related onto me as their own. But I watched this person have a PTSD breakdown before they finally shared with me what had triggered them. And I had, we had shown them a cast of a Bigfoot track, and it was a very large Bigfoot track. And this person started having a PTSD breakdown, and it took us all night to calm this person down and get the story out of them that they eventually told me. And it was the story of the Giants of Kandahar. And they had told me that, you know, they were over there in a remote base in the cave systems, and that they had some POWs with them, and they were taking them in there, and that the prisoners were screaming to not be taken in there, that they would rather be shot at that point. Because they did not want to go into the caves because they had heard such bad things lived in there and they didn't want to go in. And then once they went in, the person had told me that there was screaming that would go on through the night in the lower levels all night long, like someone being hurt. But there was no military personnel down there. Like, nothing was going on down there. It was just the prisoners. And then, you know, he later went into facing the thing. The thing that got me the most of his encounter is he described it. He described what ammunition they used against him, and that he described the spear going through, you know, the military person and putting them up. He described, but when he described the actual creature, he said that from here down, it was just primal, primitive. You know, it's like it could just tear you apart. But from here up, he said it was just intense, like sentient, intense, and like, again, primal. Like it just, there was not really anything human in its eyes. It was just feral. And he told us this, and, you know, it impacted me greatly. And I couldn't believe that he had this experience when he told me. But later he started breaking down again, and he started actually yelling at us and, you know, kind of in a caring way, but he was so upset that we go out and look blindly for this creature here that can hurt us. He said, you don't know anything about it. You don't know what it can do to you. And you guys just go out in the woods blindly looking for this. It's not safe. You guys are idiots, basically. And if anything, that encounter story impacted me more than any Bigfoot story I've ever heard. And so ever since then, I've been super interested in this topic. And then, you know, I found you, and you've actually written a book on this. And yes, it's loosely based on fiction, but the research that you did to, you know, write this book, that's kind of what I want to hear about.
Sure. So how would you like me to start out?
Well, so what prompted you to want to write this book?
You know, so like yourself, I had for years had read about this story, and in my own endeavor, and I'd actually, and so for me personally, I felt like, you know, as an individual, when I looked, for example, at the Bible, let's just say that, for example, I looked at it from a standpoint of a paranormal standpoint, that there were a lot of there were a lot of paranormal type of events in the book. And I thought, you know, if we talk about Nephilim, which is what we're talking about, I spent a lot of time. I've probably, you know, outside of trying to talk to different people and interview others, I've probably read 20 to 30 books on the topic from different scholars and different people who have different opinions on, you know, did they exist? If they existed, how did they come about? Is it possible for them to exist today, and under what type of circumstances? And then my background, I have, without going into great detail, I've got some military experience, I've got some medical experience, I've got some science experience, and so I'm very analytic. And I thought, you know, biologically, I could figure out how something like this could exist. Most people would say it's not physically possible for something like a cryptoid or this type large creature could exist.
Right.
But I can imagine that in my head. And I thought, well, maybe this isn't far-fetched, what people are saying, because I can imagine a circumstance where it could happen.
Right.
And putting all that together, and that's part the speculative part. And so as I read more and more what people have said and communicate with others, they seem pretty authentic with what what you were saying with the individual you spoke with. People that I'd come across were pretty authentic. Now, obviously, I don't have the smoking gun that says, hey, this is the definitive proof.
Right.
And so after thinking about it, I thought, you know what, this is a story that I could tell, I could write. I mean, obviously, it's not my story, but I could tell it. And then on top of that, if you read all about the Kandahar Giant, you know, the story goes that there was a creature, or this hybrid half man, half angelic being, and it was killed by the U.S. military and taken away in a helicopter.
Right.
That was kind of the storyline. Well, my storyline picks up and said, well, let's just take that storyline, and what happens if the hybrid really wasn't killed, but just captured?
Right.
And what if it were brought to a secret military location for genetics research? And that's kind of where my story picks up. But I thought, you know, if I were in the U.S. military, I'd probably want to capture the creature and not kill it if something like that did exist for study. Same thing with the Bigfoot. I mean, same rationale, right? You wouldn't want to necessarily go kill him or her. Right. You'd want to capture it for a lot of other bad reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was where I pick up with that. And I thought, you know, that's kind of how I worked my way into it, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I had actually heard, you know, read articles, and pretty sure it was on Reddit or some other such, forum, but that they, you know, after they killed it, it was dead, of course, so they couldn't have a live specimen, but that they had transported it to a secret lab in America, pieces of it. I had heard that they had pieced out that giant and sent pieces of it to different labs, under, you know, top secret, and you have to run all the gene, you know, everything on this piece of the giant, but they didn't tell the scientist that the other scientist had a piece. They wanted to know what each scientist found.
That's a plausible story. Mm-hmm. I mean, then there are certain military facilities that could do that. Again, without spoiling the book, I mean, I talk about things such as CRISPR. CRISPR is a genetic technology, for example, that you can take DNA from one hybrid creature or from one creature, and you could potentially transpose it into another creature. And that kind of technology is actually being used today in medical work. So if you look at ways to early stages of things like eye diseases and heart diseases, you know, taking good genes and basically and replacing them for the bad genes. But you could use the same concept and say, take a gene from a cryptid that's special, that provides strength or vision, and you could put it into a soldier or some other entity, and in essence that person could be like a super soldier. So, you know, that's not that far out there technology wise.
Yeah, I mean, you hear about that a lot. You hear about super soldiers, and you know, that's like everything you just said is like the basis of any recent sci-fi I've ever seen. But your book, you know, like I said, you've done the research on the Kandahar giant, and did you talk to, like you said, you had talked to people about that event. Did you talk to actual witnesses, or were you interviewing people who are more knowledgeable about the event?
It was a little bit of both. I don't know for sure, like you were saying, if I ever got to the point where someone would be willing to come out and say, hey, I was there in person. Although there were certainly people saying, hey, I was in the location, and I've talked to people who experienced this, or I was given warnings, you know, in the post about this, and we were told this, you know, about shooting high when we were out on patrol. But you've heard those things too. Mm-hmm. And so I had, you know, many, many folks say, you know, I was there, but no one necessarily willing to come out and say, hey, I'll talk to you one-on-one to give you the inside scoop.
Yeah.
Even as much as I tried, I couldn't find someone that would be willing to do that.
Right.
And there may be reasons for that, but
Yeah, I think you know, the person that I spoke to, again, if he is an actual witness or if he's a secondhand witness, like your people that he heard it, you know, through the grapevine, it took all night, like I said, to get him to calm down. And that was bulk of that was reassuring him that he is not crazy because of what he saw, which I find myself doing with Bigfoot witnesses as well. But this person, I mean, he was in full PTSD melt.
I believe it.
I mean, this triggered him. And, but he said, you know, I'm crazy. And I'm like, you're not, you know, you're not crazy for what you saw. This happened to you. And, I told him, I said, you know, there are people that you can't just walk up to someone at Walmart and tell them that you saw this and have them understand, you know, how significant that is and life-changing. I said, but you're sitting here with two people who understand and don't think you're crazy. And that helped him kind of trust us a little bit more, and he was able to tell us a little bit more. But it's hard to find someone who's going to give you that encounter. So that's why I'm a little bit skeptical that this person really had that encounter, or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, people were pretty passionate who I, you know, communicated mm-hmm. with. But again, it's hard to say no because of their passion and their belief.
Yeah. Right.
At the same time, like you're saying, though, it's hard for me to say definitively that, hey, this is
yes.
100%. Yeah. Unfortunately.
What was the, was there any information that you got that just sent chills down your spine and just, you know?
You know, it was sort of like what you had mentioned earlier in your description, because all the encounters that I had, I mean, of different folks I talked with, talked about the ferocity of the Nephilim, and it almost like it was a primordial type of individual who lacked a soul, in essence, almost when looking mm-hmm. at their eyes, and
right.
almost like a beast. Per se, mind you, in that, and I tried to, like you say, I tried to do justice in describing
right.
what that might look like in the book, mm-hmm. you know, 11, 12 feet tall, you know, in this case, it was red hair, and there's mm-hmm. a reason, there's a rationale for that. There's a lot of history in why some people think, you know, red hair was common, mm-hmm. and if you look at the Native American stories in the U.S., there are stories in the U.S. that kind of mirror what you see described there. There are actually stories from hundreds of years ago that I also brought into the book that kind of bring in that kind of perspective as well. Mm-hmm. But it was just the lack of compassion, the ferocity, the kind of like cannibalistic nature of mm-hmm. of a creature like this, and
right.
the lack of regard for human life.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned, you know, you sent me, I think, the excerpt from the book or a synopsis of the book, and you had mentioned that the crow in there. So you said, and you mentioned just now, the Native American aspect. So mm-hmm. did your research take you, did you speak to people here in America of Native American descent, and what kind of information did you end up getting out of that?
You know, so I had some brief conversations that weren't as, you know, as expanded as some of the folks who said they had military experience. And I think they were a little bit more reserved mm-hmm. and regarded in sharing information. But it was enough to kind of like confirm what mm-hmm. what we're talking about. But it wasn't necessarily like, okay, you know, in our 500-year history, let me tell you three specific encounters that you know our folks
yeah.
have had involvement with. However, there were things like, you know, in our oral legends, you know, these are the things that you know our folks, our people had encountered, you know, so many mm-hmm. years ago when they were on the land. But
right.
so it was good confirmatory, but it wasn't, again, it wasn't enough to.
Yeah.
To say, okay, here's a smoking gun
right.
that would be definitive.
Okay. Have you ever heard any accounts of this creature in this country besides way back when? Like, did anyone at all say, you know?
You know, I've. It's interesting because in looking at, there's a lot of information that people claim out there. So I was, like you're saying, I was trying to peel away what mm-hmm. I thought was more factual that I could count on versus maybe stuff that wasn't as factual. And so if you read, there are lots of stories. I mean, there are stories of folks saying, hey, there were bones of giants in the U.S. and they lived in different mm-hmm. parts of the country, and they were taken away by the Smithsonian Institute, for example.
Yeah.
You hear those kind of
I've
things
heard that
all
one.
The time.
Yeah.
You've heard that one before, and I'm kind of like, okay, well, that doesn't really help me. But
right.
there are probably, I think, reasonable stories, and I don't know again, there's a lot of sometimes conflating of mm-hmm. of tall individuals with, you know, true Nephilim type of individuals. Right. But you, there are stories though, like you know, some of the earlier settlers who explored mm-hmm. the U.S. Mm-hmm. actually had stories in diaries of encounters with, you know, like in Patagonia, mm-hmm. in places like that, where they are talking about, you know, 8-9 feet tall, you know, individuals, and then the question is whether or not they're related,
right,
to the other group. I don't know for sure, but there is, you know, in my research, I found more than 50 cultures across the world that had some type of story or legend that talked about, you know, hybrid creatures like this.
And that's amazing.
So there was a lot. It wasn't like there was just a handful, but there were over 50.
Over 50 cultures.
That's a lot. And in my research, like if you look at some of the early Jewish writers mm-hmm. around 1 BC, mm-hmm. they even talk about that a lot, but they also talk about how a lot of the early demigods, like in Greek and things like that, were mm-hmm. actually really describing these Nephilim type creatures instead. Again, I can't. These are speculation, and I'm kind of getting way
right.
out now.
But
there's a lot of discussion. But I did find a lot of discussion on those kind of things when you looked at it. But like we were saying, with all this, there's probably some nugget of truth that's kind of mm-hmm. buried in there if you go deep enough.
I think so as well. That's really interesting how many cultures have referenced, you know, that. And I guess I've always known that they've referenced giants of some kind, but usually it's hairy giants, hairy hominid, hairy wild man, right. you know, giant people covered in hair, but never humanoid giants. You know, they always put something in there that makes you think Bigfoot, but the humanoid giants, you just don't hear that as often. So that's amazing. That number really, it's impactful.
Yeah, and that's probably an underestimate. It's probably more than that. I was kind of mm-hmm. an under lowball kind of
right,
estimate
yeah.
of that. So
that's still impactful. Okay, got some questions from the chat rolling in. Back to the giant in the Middle East. Do you think the military had to conceal what they experienced?
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So that's a great question. And I don't know if that question is because you know the answer already.
I think the questioner knew
the answer already. I would, let's just say hypothetically that we'll make the assumption that it did occur. Mm-hmm. And I'll answer from that way. And I would say, yes, I would think you would have to conceal mm-hmm. it, because I've thought about this a fair amount. What kind of Pandora's box mm-hmm. are you opening up? And think about it. If you were to announce this or let people know you had this, then it kind of changes the paradigm of how we think.
Absolutely.
How do you explain this? Are there others that are like this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. What's the relationship between a Nephilim and a Bigfoot? Mm-hmm. Are there some relationship there between them, because they're, you know, there's some similarities. And also, I mean, if you're going to use it as a weapon, you certainly wouldn't want your other competitive militaries around the world to know you had something like
right.
that.
Right. You want your super soldiers to be special. Yes.
Right. Right. Right.
I say that mockingly, but I mean, it's, I'm one of those that believe that Bigfoot is real and the military knows it. And that, you know, if I were to find a Bigfoot body tomorrow, I would not have that Bigfoot body in my possession for very long. I'm one of the believers in that. And I think there's a reason there's never been a body found. I think it's just that a body has never been able to be, you know, told that it's found.
Right.
Okay. Another question. How could these creatures be destroyed if conventional methods are ineffective?
Yeah. I mean, that's another good question. I guess you have to have, I mean, in my mind, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, is it truly a type of creature that is unkillable, or is it just a very strong mm-hmm. creature that takes a lot to kill it?
Right.
And if you looked at the story with the U.S. military, the story goes that they used very high firepower and with a lot of firepower, and they killed it. And mm-hmm. so in my storyline, it would take a whole lot of firepower, and it wasn't really easy. And so mm-hmm. so that would make it tough. But to pose a very interesting question: what if you couldn't kill it? Yeah, that's a scary scenario, because what if you couldn't carry it, and what if there were more? And and at that point, what you could do is maybe try and contain it, but I don't know how you could.
Right.
And so that would make a very scary, nightmarish situation in my mind.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, just the, you know, if you go off of that encounter, they fired, I believe, 50 cal at it, and as well as just a barrage of other weaponry, and finally took it down. But I mean, I think it took a whole contingent of soldiers to take it down with their full, you know,
full armament.
So I mean, that's pretty daunting, I have to say. Okay, so another question: do you think that Bigfoot are Nephilim, and if so, why? Bigfoot, not the giant.
Yeah. I thought about this question before the show mm-hmm. tonight.
Yeah. We had touched on that. if you choose to plead the fifth, that's fine. Do you think that there's a good supporting reason why they could be, whether you feel that way or not? You can play devil's advocate if you want.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that there's a relationship in my mind. Again, I don't know mm-hmm. everyone's thoughts, so you might have talked about this in great detail, I'm sure, before now.
I would guess to have touched on it. Generally, you know, there are some people that feel very, very passionately that these beings, there's no other reason for their existence other than that they are Nephilim, or that their paranormal attributes make them, that verifies that they're Nephilim. You know, there's a lot of people that feel very passionately that they are in fact Nephilim, and a lot that believe they are flesh and blood anomalies. So.
Yeah, I mean, is it? I could be convinced that there's a paranormal connection. I could be convinced of that. I mean, if you look at a Nephilim and you look at what that's supposed to represent, it's supposed to have some type of either direct connection to some type of, you know, say fallen angel, or some type mm-hmm. of spiritual connection with a Nephilim spirit. If you look at the way that the argument is made, so I mean, I'm trying. That's a tough one.
It is. It is. It's hard because we don't know. It's like when people ask me, you know, prove to me that Bigfoot's real, and I'm like. There's just so much to unpack there. But so in your book, you do portray the giant as Nephilim, right?
I do. Yes. As a Nephilim. Yes.
Yeah.
And without getting into, again, to the storyline, don't want to mm-hmm. run it, but there is in his case, there's a direct descendancy mm-hmm. to fallen angels,
right?
In that storyline, but which goes back a really long time. Mm-hmm. This is a crazy, crazy idea, but if you follow the Nephilim, the storyline is that there were also supposed to be interactions with animals as well as humans, so mm-hmm. having hybrids. And I don't know if a Bigfoot could be a hybrid mm-hmm. of a primate, right. From 1,000 years ago. And again, that's really way out there.
Right. I mean, I've had people just, well, why do you believe in Bigfoot? Why don't you think it's just a monkey on a barrel in the woods? I'm like, oh, that's more plausible. People will go out of their way to not think about things if it doesn't fit their narrative. In the book, you actually use those Native American accounts to support
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Cowboys has a question. Michael, have you researched the Nantanak Bigfoot in Alaska and some of the lore from the natives there? I probably butchered that, but I tried real hard.
thanks for the question, Cowboy. I have not, although I'd love to learn more about it. I don't know if you know much about it, Lauren, or if there's a good nope. book to read on it or not.
No, definitely, if you can, I can send you that, a copy of that message, mm-hmm. so that you can maybe use that for a sequel if that's, something,
Yeah.
Okay. And, okay. Let me see if there are any more questions. I don't think so. So you had, had you planned to go the Nephilim angle before you started this book, or did that kind of just develop?
I actually started with that angle because it's something I had thought about for a long time. I guess it's one of those ideas that I thought, that story, because in my mind, when I've kept reading about the Kandahar Giant, I kept thinking, there's a whole lot more to this than what meets the eye in my mind, that there's just got to be more out there. And so then I started researching it. And so I've got other ideas, a list of other kind of book ideas, but I thought, let's start there, right. and start with that. But, I wanted to spend enough time doing research on it so that, like you said, I felt like what I put in the book was, as close as I could, as many facts as I could, or at least secondhand information that I could put in there.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Okay. All right. In your research, did you delve much into the local history of the giant in Kandahar in the Middle East area?
Okay. So I'm assuming local as in like interacting with the local folks,
right,
in the region.
Yes. Either interacting with them or even just your research of accounts taken from that area, maybe.
I did some, and it seemed like what I end up finding was that people were very nervous to talk about it, number one.
Right.
And those that did talk about it would clam up after just the first mm-hmm. one or two sentences. They didn't want to go very
right.
deep. But they were also very fearful of it, fearful of the topic. And it was more along the lines of, yes, we have giants in caves and they eat children. Mm-hmm. I've heard that many times, that they eat children. And
right.
But nothing with a smoking gun. Mm-hmm. Without actually going there in person, it'd be kind of hard to probably get, particularly locally there, to get folks who are in the more remote regions, obviously, that might have experience to it. Without actually going there, it's pretty difficult, obviously.
Right. Right. Did you see, it's interesting to me. So the people that, the encounters of them eating children, that just like hits me, because the encounters here of Bigfoot with the Cherokee specifically are that they are baby eaters, mm-hmm. And so it's just, I don't know, that's kind of interesting to me, that the Cherokee here used to have territories and treaties with the Bigfoot, and they would put, you know, berries and other gifts at the borderline, and that way they wouldn't eat their women and children. And so I just think that's interesting.
I did find a few stories where it talked about the locals trying to offer sacrifices, isn't the right word, but they would leave out, you know, meat and food and stuff like that, kind of like in an effort to kind of keep it away from, you know, from their villages and stuff like that. But those kind of stories.
Yeah, I think I had heard from the witness that I talked to that shared the giant story that when they would patrol the area around those cave systems, that, you know, the U.S. would patrol this area and another nation, their military would patrol this area, and no one would patrol the middle because no one would go in the middle. Like, there was nobody there. Even the locals wouldn't go to that area. And it was supposedly the area where the giants lived. Did you come across anything like that?
Yeah, I came across, there were certain areas where they didn't want to go to, particularly at night in the dark. Okay. And there were also stories of, you know, prior to that, that, for example, Russian forces were there, you know, years before that. And there were stories of Russian forces also coming across these and having bad experiences as well, that I ran across one story. And one gentleman said he had been over there, and he was a former Russian military person, and he just said it was, you know, they had some very bad experiences, and they wouldn't patrol the area, and many of their men were killed, and they wanted to leave the area.
Oh my gosh.
So
I had not heard that one. So that's interesting. Yeah. It just dawned on me, back to the giant being, you know, killed and parted out. I remember now, there, the scientist was a woman, I believe, and she had received the hand, and she said it was blue, and she had received the hand, and there was something about, she had shared that information with her husband or something like that, and then he ended up dying suspiciously afterwards. And so that kind of goes back to, you know, is the military going to cover that up or not? So it's kind of scary.
Yeah, it is scary. And I would think, at least in my experiences, a lot of these, obviously it's not unusual probably for the military to cover up on these kind of clandestine type of things. You know, and you probably talked about it in regards to, you know, the military folks interacting with Bigfoot. And that's probably even obviously more common, I imagine, than what you're talking about here with the Kandahar story.
Yeah. Yeah. The other author that I interview, I've had him on a couple times, good friend of mine, he actually includes in his very first book, he has a military pilot, and the pilot is flying over southeast Oklahoma, and his plane crashes into a clan of Bigfoot. And it's all kind of tied in there. It's actually a really good book also, but he ties in the military a lot into his book as well, because it's kind of one of those things, you know, that we know that they know, you know, that we know that they know, but,
right,
you know.
Right, wink, wink, nod, nod, yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to tell us, though.
So
I know that you're not a researcher, per se. You're not a Bigfoot researcher, per se, right?
Right, right.
But we did get a question. I think it's just a hypothetical for you, but I would like to hear your answer.
Sure.
If you did get great footage of a Bigfoot or giant or, you know, how would you present it so not to have it torn apart by human incredulity?
Yeah. So the question is, I mean, because as soon as someone comes out with something, they're going to be told it's fake and all that kind of stuff,
right,
regardless of authenticity and all that. And, you know, I would, for me, I would probably, and again, I've not thought about this, so I'm just going to give you off the cuff kind of answer. I would want to do everything that I could to have, before I shared that, I would want to have a bunch of proof backing it up as it's to its authenticity.
Right.
And so that might mean, again, I'm not a film expert, but it would be, you know, having someone who could look at the film and make sure that it was valid. I would probably have some testimonies from top tier witnesses that could, and this stuff's probably already going on, top tier witnesses that would testify to it if I could get them, obviously.
Right.
It would be great. I don't know if I would want to, it'd be really hard to do, but I'd want to maybe even a top tier media outlet involved so that it's, it comes out from a very reputable, you know, sound source.
Right. Kind of a press release, so to speak, about it. I think that's a good plan. I think, you know, we don't think about that as much as we should. Having maybe a panel of diversified and academic, you know, scientists, different scientists, but a diversified panel that is kind of on standby to just verify this. Because I feel like the Bigfoot community, especially, we kind of just all do it on our own. We all kind of do it on our own. We have, you know, we do have, you know, scientists that are really great about identifying tracks, going through audio and verifying it, going through video and verifying it, getting them all to work together to verify some type of evidence would be the challenge, but it would be great if we had somewhere centralized for all that to go to be verified. That would be amazing, but unfortunately, we're not quite that cohesive, and we're not there yet. We don't have it together yet.
and not to sound too conspiratorial here, but do you think there's a vested interest that would want that kind of validity to not go forward?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you go into the national parks, the forestry service, oil and gas, you know, anything like that is going to be impacted by having a species out there that doesn't, you know, that will. I mean, we know they're out there. The government knows they're out there. And I feel that the government knows where they are out there. And I think that human nature, we can't just let it be out there. We have to try to control it. So then we would have to, you know, control, rope off all the national parks and like, they can't go anywhere. You know, just, I think it would impact civilization way too much to say, yes, this thing's out there, leave it alone. So, I mean, that's my personal theory on it.
I agree with your points. I think if all of a sudden there was made known in a very public venue about a new species, I can only also think of all the negative effects for the species.
Right.
And because there's going to be a bunch of folks out there who have nefarious, you know, reasons to go out. And I would be concerned about that more than, I mean, almost more than anything else is you know, that kind of harm that would happen.
One of the things that I often talk about is that it doesn't stop with proven. So even if one day the government does what it did with UFOs and it lifts the veil and it's like, oh, hey, by the way, these are real. It doesn't stop with proven for us. Then we have to turn to conservation. And so that's where we get to verify all of the data that we've all collected over the years and see just how good we are. And then also turn that over so that we can put it together and start conservation efforts for these creatures. Not that they may even need it, but if we were to have to put them, start doing to them what we do for other animals, you know, don't shoot them. Not that we could, because we can't find them, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
All right, one more question. Michael Ferguson has always been a big has always had a big interest in the unknown and how the supernatural events intersect with science. Can you give an example of that?
Of how the supernatural intersects with science?
Yes, sir.
Now you've got me on the spot. I got to tell you a supernatural with the science. I think that, well, just in general, I think, as I think about how we as a society have thought about supernatural and science over the years, mm-hmm. We've grown and we've learned. Mm-hmm. And so there are things that perhaps that we've considered supernatural years ago, right?
Absolutely.
That in today's world wouldn't necessarily be supernatural. And mm-hmm. and so I think about it, maybe there are other species out there, for example.
Yes.
This may be supernatural to us, but maybe it's very normal in their ecosystem.
Right.
And once we learn more about it, and maybe once we're mature enough as a society to respect and learn a little bit mm-hmm. more, be more open-minded, maybe then we'll find out that this isn't supernatural, but this is,
right.
you know, a new species that has different abilities than maybe we do, and it's not supernatural, but it's part of the grand design.
Right.
And that's so for me, that's kind of the way I think about it.
Yeah, I agree. That's actually something that I have heard in, you know, the past year especially, is that everything's supernatural until it's proven, until it's scientifically proven. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so where can we find your book? And are you writing a sequel? And do you have any ideas from your research and all that you've uncovered? Did it spawn ideas for other books?
Yes, 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 and yes. So the book is actually at Amazon. It's also at Barnes & Noble. So, you know, please encourage you to read it, check it out. Mm-hmm. So it's there. The second question was, do I have a sequel planned? Is that the second question?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. And I was just working on the outline last night.
Awesome.
Without giving away the ending of the first mm-hmm. novel, because you'll have to read it to find out how it ends.
Yes.
But there's a natural progression for an even bigger player from a Nephilim to come back in the sequel. And I'll probably bring in, so the first one was more US based. Mm-hmm. The second sequel, I've been doing some research about things in North Africa, as well as some things in the Vatican
okay.
that I can also bring in as a tie to awesome. That, but also still keeping it very modern, keeping
right.
it very current modern times today. So it's not mm-hmm. like 1,000 years ago or 1,000 years in the future or whatever it's today,
right.
with today's events. And so that will be the sequel to that.
Okay.
I would love to write other books too. I mean, I would love to do some research on Bigfoot, but more research on
right.
Bigfoot. But again, I'm being very cautious here because I want to be very respectful.
Right.
And I don't want to just come up with a speculative fiction novel. So maybe,
right.
I don't know if it should be speculative or it should be something different than that. Because
right.
in my mind, I feel like there's a lot more proof, obviously, in this mm-hmm. space than, say, with the Kandahar Giant.
Right.
And so I'd want to be very, you know, cautious as to how I proceeded with that, to do it in a
right
in an appropriate manner.
Yeah, maybe have a Bigfoot researcher come into the book, and you know,
as maybe they could be a co-author. Someone wants to be a co-author.
Yeah, you know, we have a lot of great sources out there that are also mm-hmm. authors, so that is not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would be a great spinoff series, because I can tell you that the Kandahar Giant, like when you contacted me, I was flabbergasted that there was a book about this. And yes, it's loosely fiction, but still, that there was a book about this, because I know from Weird Realities, which is another podcast associated with Nightcallers, that the research that authors have to do for their books, I know that several of my people are on government watch list from their research alone, because you guys have to research a lot of weird things and a lot of scary things.
How do you find that out? I mean, how do they know? I mean, do I need to go search?
Yeah. So I know that's why I was so excited when you contacted me, because yeah. I know that the research you put into it, you were going to be very knowledgeable about this topic, and have some snippets of knowledge that I didn't know about, which you did. So I'm really glad that I had you on the show. Well, and
my,
I think
my family's kind of like, they're kind of like, okay, be careful because of the reasons you just said.
But absolutely. Anyway. Yeah. Like we had mentioned before, we, you know, chatted before the show, Nephilim is a very hot button for people. I have seen more fights break out on the internet about that, in the Bigfoot community specifically, about that topic than any other topic. You can say that Bigfoot turns into a unicorn at night and poops glitter, and you will not fight with someone as much as if you drop the N-word, the Nephilim N-word, around people. They just, people are very passionate about that.
I mean, I've seen that, like we were talking earlier, I've seen people they get really passionate for sure about this topic. And
yes,
you know, it's a hot topic.
Yeah. Well, hats off to you for being brave enough to write about that topic and to, you know, put research time effort into that and create a book for us to read. So I appreciate you very much for your efforts and also for coming on the show tonight. You have been amazing. And I hope we did justice for you, for your book and your work.
I appreciate it for having me, and I've enjoyed the conversation. And, you know, I definitely want to learn more now that I've been on the show. Yes. I want to learn more about, you know, the phenomenon in this area for sure, and do some more research on it. So
Thank you. Absolutely. And I'll send you that message with the Alaskan tribe in it for you to kind of poke around. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight. And I'm going to put you back in the queue and I will chat with you in just a second. Okay. Thank you. Okay, everybody, you guys be sure to go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and check out his book, The Genesis 6 Project. And if you have any other questions for him, he has a website as well. Thank you guys so much for listening tonight. Thank you for your questions in the chat, your support. Be sure to like and subscribe. Hit that notification bell so you don't miss the next show. Next time, we will have David Wilbanks on, who is a Bigfoot researcher and author out of Oklahoma. He is very popular. I have had so many of you message me and ask if I will have him on. So your wish is my command. Next Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, bring a like for the guest and bring your questions to the chat. All right, you guys, stay safe, be kind, and I will see y'all next time.